Welcome to episode 206 of Teacher Tech Talk. I'm your host, Tom Varnum, the digital learning specialist for the Tyngsborough Public Schools in Tyngsborough, Massachusetts. Once again, I'm coming to you from the man cave in my condo as we continue with remote learning. My guest this week is Tim Doust, a first-year media teacher at Tyngsborough Middle and High Schools. Before coming to Tyngsborough, he worked for the Fitchburg and Framingham Public School Districts and also worked in the television industry with PBS, E! The Entertainment Network, and TV Guide. This episode arose from a conversation we were having on a Google Meet. I didn't plan it to be a podcast episode, but I realized it quickly evolved into one. Fortunately, I was recording the meeting. That having been said, please excuse the somewhat awkward beginning and ending of our conversation. I wanted to ask him about project-based learning and how that went for him during this period of remote learning. Whatever happens in the fall, we're not going to be going, kids aren't going to be going to school 5 days a week. They're just not.
Yeah.
No way they can do that and follow the guidelines. So we're going to have to move to more stuff that works better remotely. And I think project-based learning is one of those things. So I guess I wanted to talk to you and some of the other specialists about what you found is effective in planning, implementing, and assessing, mm-hmm. Sort of projects as opposed to traditional, more traditional summative assessments, test quizzes, etc.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of it in the sense of like, my fiance does ESL in Framingham, and she's like at 50% participation, but they meet every day, like, and it's elementary school. So it's like a classroom, all the kids join in, or not all, like 50% of the kids. And I'm like, does that work well? Or like you were saying, is it better to give them the time? Because it's almost like what Chris was saying about the online video meeting fatigue.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, is it better to give a project and check in like once a week, or maybe twice a week, and give them that time to kind of do their assignments? Or is it better to have that every single day contact? And I was thinking of it in that sense. Is that where you were going?
Yeah, I think that's a good question.
Yeah. Even like just mental health, like, yeah, trying to consider it in participation.
I think it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. I think you need the interaction.
Yeah.
The kids need the interaction. We need the interaction for our, our mental health and everything, but
yeah,
it is exhausting. I haven't read the article that Tim
Chris
referenced, but
yeah,
there is some exhaustion from, it's screen exhaustion. I call it screen exhaustion.
Yeah. I can only imagine your first few weeks of doing this. It's just constant.
It was quite busy. I did feel very appreciated though. Everybody's like, oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah. And the kids appreciate the teachers as well, but they're not as quick to say it.
Yeah.
The teachers are much more quick to say it. So, we need to do it to, keep the kids connected, mm-hmm. but is every day too much? And I think, if you polled the parents, they would certainly say that every day is too much.
Yeah. I know that a lot of them are struggling with just that fight with their kids to like, mm-hmm. get online every day and get the assignments done. And it's like, so I'm even getting emails from parents this late in the year, like these next 3 weeks, they're like, a lot of the kids are giving up. They're like, they don't want to do this assignment. Like, is there anything, do they have to do this? And so I get it. It's the end of the year, but going into next year, I think it's, we all know that's going to be trial and error, whatever format we try, our configuration of online and in person. But I mean, eventually we'll figure it out, but yeah, like hit the, what's the term? Hit the ground running, like with a solid idea. I like the idea of project-based. I think that it could work with the other classes, but I don't know how that looks. And as long as the students have technology at their fingertips, I think most of Tingsboro students do.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think we're pretty fortunate in that. Does it?
Yeah.
A handful. I know that Derek Piper delivered maybe, 150 Chromebooks.
Okay.
And some of those might be just that, they had a computer in the home, but
yeah,
mom or dad is using it,
right,
for business. So the kid needed one for him or herself.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think I talked to Derek early and he said maybe there were a handful of kids who didn't have internet access.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think that's probably mission, one of the first missions for any of these subcommittees is we need to get every kid internet access.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And then,
that's a technical business issue. That's, that should be something that should be an easy thing to do.
Yeah. I do know, like in larger cities that, the schools are providing like hotspots for families without that. I don't know how that gets paid or how that works.
I was just on a meeting yesterday with some teachers from Lawrence.
Okay. That's a great example.
Yeah. They said that Xfinity will not provide a low income family with a hotspot if they have an outstanding Xfinity balance.
Ah, oh, crap. That's and like a ton of people.
That's a lot of that. Yeah. That's the case that for a lot of those families is that they just can't. That's we got to sacrifice something, and that's one of the things we're going to sacrifice.
Yeah.
So fortunately, that is not a huge issue in Tingsboro as far as I know. So I don't think that's – I think, one of the assumptions that I think we have to make is that every kid is going to have access to technology, whether or not he or she chooses to use it. That's different. So let's, when you're planning sort of a project-based assignment, what kind of thoughts go into it, other than, I'm trying to figure out how to word it. Some teachers are, if I'm a math teacher and we're doing factoring, I'm teaching to the test because the test is you need to demonstrate to me that you know how to factor.
Yeah.
How is it different for you?
Well, this was a great example because we went into this like maybe a week or 2 weeks into the third trimester where I really only met with the students a few times, especially at the middle school, like maybe twice. And at the high school, we had like a week before we got into stuff. So all my like really like hands-on stuff that kind of gets pushed out the door. Like they can use their cell phones as cameras and they can download their own video editing app and things like that. So I had to rethink, okay, well, how can I make this, how setting up a tripod and stuff like that, that's a very kind of physical thing and nobody has access to that and I could make a video for it. But I had to kind of think around that. Whereas like, math and things like that, I think the struggle is like, we're constantly getting back like questions about like, I don't understand the assignment and they're not reading it. There's like a generation of skimmers and I'm guilty of that too. But I think like videos, when teachers do videos, that's a little bit more helpful as long as they're like within if I see a video that's like 20 minutes, I'm like, oh,
You think the students are more apt to watch an instructional video than read an instructional Google Doc?
I think if you had both, like, so all the UAs in the middle school did, we all gathered together for the last 3 weeks and we're doing Kane's Arcade, It's like, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's like this kid that made an entire arcade out of cardboard stuff that he collected. And so that's the project. And it's kind of like a STEM project. Okay. But it's going to include all the teacher, like media studies. The kids will document their journey through this for STEM. They're going to build it. They're going to go through the scientific process, how they researched it, how they collect their materials, all that jazz. And so each teacher sort of has an element in it. I forget where I was going with this.
The making a video, an instructional video.
So what Steve Bellrose did was he created the Google slide instructions that you can kind of go through if you're kind of the visual type. But then he also created a video where he explained it. You're not seeing his face or anything, but he walks through it. And I felt like that was helpful. Steve has a tendency to kind of get like he explains things in depth. So the video was extra long. But if you can narrow that, I feel like shorter videos are easier for kids to like that attention span. A 20-minute video, you're going to lose.
Attention span.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I never thought of that as far as, you know, giving instructions for a project using, I mean, it, you know, we're changing almost all of our methods over the last couple of months, but I never thought that kids are probably more likely to watch a video for an explanation than to read it on a document. And if you use the video, you can, you know, you can show them, not only tell them, but you can show them what you want them to do.
Yeah. And I know for me, like if I'm like, oh, I forgot how to do that in Photoshop or whatever, I'll go to a video and I'll just pause it and I'll go back and forth between the software and the video. And for the kids, maybe in the process where, I mean, they could probably go back to a recording of the classroom discussion, but if they have that video, one, a lot of kids are anxious, I can tell, about being in a video chat, like they don't show up or, you know, they'll shut off their camera and you kind of get a sense of that. If it's just a video instruction, they don't feel that anxiety kind of going into the project maybe of interacting. So
if it's a one-way thing rather than a two-way thing?
Yeah, but I also feel that there's value in that face-to-face type of thing. You know, you want to make that connection with the kids. So I don't know if that makes sense.
No.
You know, like I think like if you're starting out where it's just something pre-recorded, they can kind of go into it and not feel any anxiety, I guess, about interacting with somebody, but then maybe touch base. I don't know how to.
Right. I think there's two different uses for the video. Yeah. One, a pre-recorded how-to video on, you know, what you want the project to look like and what your expectations are and things like that. And then you can also use video for feedback, for, you know, dialogue and things like that. You can use the live video for that. So I think that there are two uses for it.
Okay.
I hadn't really thought about that first use taking the place of, you know, as a former English teacher, I'm always thinking, you know, I write it down in a Google Doc.
Right.
And go from there. But
yeah,
maybe this might be a better way to approach a project-based assignment, especially if we are not constantly face-to-face with the students.
Yeah, and you could have both so that they're kind of complementing each other, I guess. Yeah.
So my next question would be, how do you assess group work?
Ooh,
That is a huge challenge.
Because you know, there's one kid that's like doing most of the stuff all the time. That's always been a tough thing for me. I mean, in person, it's always sort of like, okay, you guys are all sitting around, and this kid is, you know, editing the project or doing all the work. You can kind of tell. So you're gonna have to light the fire under their butt and be like, you guys are responsible for this or accountable for this too. But over online or virtual way,
that's an even bigger issue.
The only thing I could think of is like more meetings. Like if you know, you have group A, B, and C and D in a history class and they're all choosing a different, you know, group project to do, then you would have to have meetings with A, B, C, D, and yeah, kind of check in and see, okay, and assess that that way, I would assume.
I battled with this a long time, and I you know, there are students who, there are college students, there are graduate students who despise work.
Yeah,
because it's the same thing,
right?
I have a young woman who was one of my former basketball players, mm-hmm, is in a master's degree program at Merrimack, and before, you know, this all shut everything down, she would have dinner with us every Wednesday, and with my wife and I, and she would express her frustration at some of the people in her group that, you know, just wouldn't do the work, that were just, you know, Debbie Downers as
well,
or administrator. Oh, not going to work this way. And, you know, and that's in graduate school. These are people with bachelor's degrees, and they still, you know, I tried to tell her, I said, listen, I understand your frustration, but in the real world, everybody has to work in groups.
Yeah, that's true.
And we've got to figure out a way to deal with it, either, you know, if you're the, you know, type A personality who needs to make sure everything is perfect, or if you're the slacker who's just, everybody else is going to do this for me. So I know when I was back in the classroom, I tried a whole bunch of different things. I tried self-evaluations. I tried, you know, I used Google Forms for a while. You know, how would you rate your effort in this project in relation to the other people in the classroom?
Oh, that's a good way.
Yeah, and I haven't found, you know, the another thing is like a daily journal. What did you do today?
Yeah.
You know, maybe like an exit, almost like an exit ticket. What did you do to help the project along today?
Yeah.
So I think there's a bunch of tools in the toolbox, but there's really no, you know, if there was an easy way to do this, someone would have come up with it and made a boatload of money
to
school districts. Mm-hmm. But I didn't, you know, I just didn't know if you had some sort of insight, because, you know, it's, you know, you do more of it than other people.
Yeah. I think having, that video instruction and maybe breaking it down into smaller parts, like for this Canes Arcade thing, has been kind of eye opening. Like, there's a lot of confusion from the kids, and I get that.
How do you spell it? Is it C-A-I-N-E?
It's like, I think it's like, it's C-A-I-N-E, like Cain and Abel, or, you know, the old story. It's this little kid that his dad had some kind of mechanic shop, and he decided, I'm going to collect all the cardboard and make an arcade out of it. And it became like this documentary, and now a bunch of STEM teachers use it. But
all right, so so we talked about evaluating individual people in a group activity. How do you evaluate the group as a whole? Like, I used to do, okay, you get an individual grade and you get a group grade.
Yeah.
And if your group did really well and you were just, you know, along for the ride, the group may get an A, but you may get a D because you didn't do anything.
Right. Yeah.
What do you do for the group? Do you use rubrics? Do you use, does it change for each one? What do you use?
It differs for each project, and you can create a rubric, and I've used the rubrics in the past. I guess what I found helpful is, and this probably works easier with something like mine, where every single person within the group is integral in creating, say, like a video. Like, right, you have somebody that shoots it. If they don't shoot it, then you have no footage. Right. Somebody that does audio, and then somebody that edits it. If they don't edit it, then there's no final result. Somebody who directs. So you can kind of assess each team member. But for, like, I don't know, like, say a math, I don't know, I can't think of an example for a math project. I'm trying to think of, You have to make each team member accountable. And I think that's like the tale as old as time. Yeah. with those types of group assessments. I really like the idea of that, the Google Form self-evaluation or group evaluation, like have them see if you have them grade each other, they'll all give each other A's.
Yeah. Well, some of them.
Yeah. Or they'll point those out.
Yeah.
That is, yeah, that's a
It's a challenge, and I think it's a challenge we're going to have to address maybe in a more comprehensive manner going forward, because I really think in looking at how what this has sort of taught us about how education maybe needs to change going forward is things we need to be prepared for these interruptions. For the next calendar year, I would think.
Yeah.
So how do we prepare for it?
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things is I think we need to, and for our own sanity too, as teachers, more group, more project-based stuff, more giving students the options to demonstrate what they know rather than us trying to figure out what they don't know with a traditional, multiple choice, true false matching type test.
Right.
And give them the opportunity, do they want to make a video? Do they want to do a PowerPoint? Do they want to do a podcast?
Yeah. Whatever it is.
And I think that's one of the things that we can do to make this remote education in whatever form it's going to be over the next year or so a better fit for the students.
Yeah. So it's definitely leaning towards a lot of more media response from the student. Like you had said, like a video project or podcast, them kind of demonstrating their knowledge and what they've learned. Do you foresee a lot more of that?
Well,
versus
if I were in the classroom, yes.
Yeah.
That's the way I would go, because I think one of the challenges that a lot of teachers faced, most if not all teachers faced, was how to engage the students in remote learning.
Yeah.
And I think one of the ways, there is no magic bullet, but I think one of the ways that we can engage students more is to give them more choice in how they demonstrate their learning to us. And if you've got a kid who's really good with video, or a kid who's a great artist, or a kid who is good in group work, or who's a good writer, let them choose the best method for them to demonstrate their learning. And I think, I think that's going to be part of, I hope that's going to be part of the solution with students going forward in engaging them more in this learning exercise, because, the way it worked for us in Massachusetts, really the remote learning, there were no consequences, for lack of a better term, for them not participating in remote learning. There was no effect in their grade. And a lot of kids looked at it and said, okay, I'll see you in September.
That's right. It. Yeah.
And that can't happen starting in September. We've already lost too much ground.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to have to, that's going to help with some of the student engagement in that, hey, listen, this is not what happened in the spring.
Yeah.
This time it counts, as they used to say.
The
Major League All-Star game. This time it counts. So I think that's going to help a little bit, but I think we also need to do things to get people more, get students more engaged. And I think this is one way to do it. I think another thing that we have to do is we have to move to a more asynchronous model, in that we can't expect students to do in a remote learning situation, we can't expect students to do the project or the ed puzzle video or whatever it is that we assign. We can't expect them to be able to do it at the same time as everybody else in the class.
Yeah.
Because in a remote learning situation, you've got parents who are working from home or who are, yeah. who are out, you know, on the front lines. You get students who might, especially at the upper grades, who might have to babysit their younger siblings, or you might have kids. And I know this was the case with some of our kids who were working at Market Basket or working at Efforts, and they might have been the only person in their household who still had a job. You can't expect the kid to be ready at 8 o'clock in the morning to watch your video. You've got to make it so that he or she can access that when it is convenient for them. So I think that's another thing that we need to move on. And that, that's going to tie into video,
You're 100% right.
Screencastifies and things like that. So I just think that we're going to need to, I think the non-specialist teachers, let's just put it that way, your English teachers, your social studies, math, science, etc., they're going to have to look more toward what the specialists do for a couple of reasons. And, we talked about a little bit already, but also because you tend to see students not every day.
Right.
Yeah. You see, you'll see them Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or you'll see them Monday, Wednesday, and then you'll see them Tuesday, Thursday. And you might only see them for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then move on to a new set of students. So, That was one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, and I'm going to talk to some other of our colleagues. Well, that's all for this week's episode. I'd like to thank Tim Dowse for joining me and sharing his thoughts about project-based learning during remote education. If you want to leave us a voice message, you can do so from the Anchor app on your phone by clicking the message button. If you'd like to suggest a future topic or future guest for Teacher Tech Talk, you can leave a voice message or send me an email. For my email address, check out the show notes page on my website, bit.ly/VarnumBlog. That's bit.ly/VarnumBlog. You can also find this information on the podcast homepage, anchor.fm/teacher-tech-talk. I hope to join you soon with another episode before this school year comes to a rather interesting conclusion. And I think even more important now in these times, you need to remember, don't be afraid to try something new in the classroom, either virtual or remote. I'll catch you next time.